This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Started solidarity to assist the government and people of the Republic of Congo in its efforts to restore peace and stability in the eastern part of the country.
That's Namibian President Hage Geingob on SADC plans to send a peacekeeping force to the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. Details coming up. Also, there are growing regional concerns about Sudan's conflict. And in Nigeria, at least 20 kidnapped churchgoers remain missing. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. The South African Development Community, SADC, plans to send troops to the Democratic Republic of Congo to help fight rebels in the country's east. DRC President Felix Tshisekedi arrived in Botswana's capital on Tuesday and is expected to discuss details of the deployment with the regional bloc's leaders. Mokondisi Dube reports from Habrone, Botswana.
Addressing the media at the end of a special SADC meeting in Windhoek, Namibian President Hage Geingob said the security situation in eastern DRC is cause for concern. Geingob is the chairperson of the SADC organ on politics, security and defense.
The summit therefore reiterated SADC solidarity to assist the government and people of the Republic of Congo in its efforts to restore peace and stability in the eastern part of the country, particularly in light of the upcoming national elections scheduled for December 2023.
Reading out the Windhoek Summit resolution, SADC Executive Secretary Elias Makhosi said the meeting resolved to send troops to the DRC to assist in ending hostilities.
Summit approved the deployment of a SADC force within the framework of the SADC standby force as a regional response in support of the DRC to restore peace and security in eastern DRC. Summit approved a common position to have a more coordinated approach, given the multiple deployments under multilateral and bilateral arrangements in the eastern DRC, and urged the government of the DRC to put in place the necessary conditions and measures for effective coordination amongst sub-regional forces and bilateral partners operating in the DRC.
South Africa, a SADC member, already has 1,184 soldiers deployed in the DRC under the United Nations peacekeeping mission in the DRC, known as MONUSCO. Security expert William Els at the Pretoria-based Institute of Security Studies says there is a need for clarity on the deployment of the SADC force.
They didn't give any detail. We do not know if they're going to complement the currently the troops that are currently being deployed in the DRC under MONUSCO, or whether they will be separate. We do not know how they're going to complement the East African forces. We know that Kenya as well as Uganda have already deployed some troops there.
Conflict has heightened in the DRC's North Kivu province, where hundreds have been killed and more than 300,000 displaced in fighting between M23 rebels and government forces. Els says any SADC troops deployed in the DRC need proper backup in order to be effective.
So if these troops are going to be deployed without any the necessary air support, and also to provide them with the air dominance, it's going to face a very similar situations and also the similar outcome that they have currently in Cabo Delgado.
Troops in Cabo Delgado have been unable to stop an Islamist militant insurgence in that energy-rich Mozambican province. DRC President Felix Tshisekedi arrived Tuesday in Habaroni, where we will hold talks with Botswana's President Mokgweetsi Masisi as well as SADC senior personnel. Mqondisi Dube for VOA News, Habaroni, Botswana.
Top officials from the United States and Saudi Arabia are involved in the push for a ceasefire in Sudan through a U.S.-Saudi initiative. However, some former U.S. diplomats doubt there will be a permanent ceasefire or an end soon to the war between Sudan's army and its paramilitary rapid support forces. VOA senior analyst Mohammed Al-Shinawi has more.
So far, there are no reports of significant progress in the talks in Jeddah, which began Saturday despite the involvement of Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman and U.S. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan. In a joint statement, the United States and Saudi Arabia urged both parties to consider the interests of the Sudanese nation and its people and actively engage in the talks toward a ceasefire and end to the conflict. Hundreds of civilians have died in more than 3 weeks of fighting, and hundreds of thousands have fled their homes, and the United Nations warns of a massive humanitarian crisis. Sudan's military ruler, General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, has said the talks with the paramilitary rapid support forces will have no benefit without a ceasefire. General Mohammed Hamdan Dagalo, who leads the RSF, said the group appreciates all efforts to establish a ceasefire and provide the Sudanese people with aid. Ambassador Donald Booth, former U.S. Special Envoy to Sudan, spoke to VOA's Carol Castile on the program Encounter about possible approaches for mediation.
There's two ways you can go about this. You can try to get everybody beforehand to say, let's all get behind one proposed mediator and then kind of tell the Sudanese they have to work with that. Or we can say, here, everybody is out there offering mediation. Let the Sudanese decide who they will actually sit down with and then get behind that.
Ambassador Tibor Nagy, former U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs, agrees with the concept. He notes, however, that Sudan is a crossroad between the Middle East and Africa, so neighboring countries have their own interests in Sudan. On VOA's Encounter program, Nagy said, while there are many forces at work, the international community has to be united with the same message to the two warring sides.
The world needs to show some unity. Who is going to engage with them? Who is going to send the message? It has to be the same message. And at the end of the day, no matter how many international initiatives there are, the two protagonists have to be willing to stop fighting.
Nagy does not expect a speedy end to the Sudanese conflict as long as the two generals have their hands on weapons and are getting tremendous pressure from their own constituencies based on their economic interests. But Ambassador Booth warns if the war continues, neighboring countries will be concerned that instability could spill over and create an entrenched ethnic-based civil war.
I think everybody's interest in stability is what we need to build on, and which I believe the United States is working on right now, which is trying to bring the various components together. And there, I think it's the Gulf states and Egypt, and the United States can really play that facilitative role. And I think what I've seen is we are trying to do that. And we put a lot of high-level attention into that, and I hope that will continue.
The fighting began when Al-Burhan and Dagalo disputed plans to create a transitional government leading to civilian rule. Some regional analysts say to end the conflict, the two generals should not be part of the solution and must exit the political scene. But the two U.S. diplomats say, for now, both generals have to be part of the solution until Sudan finds a leader able to gradually bring the country towards democracy, reducing the power of the military after decades of its involvement in politics and economy. For VOA, Mohammed Al-Shinawi, Washington.
With no sign of progress at peace talks between Sudan's warring parties, analysts warn the conflict in Sudan could have grave consequences for the country's neighbors, as well as for hopes that Sudan can one day have a government led by civilians instead of the military. VOA's Africa correspondent Mariama Diallo has this report from Nairobi.
25 days since the war in Sudan broke out, there are no indications the warring factions have any intentions of negotiating an end as fighting rages on. Ravina Shamdasani, spokesperson for the UN Human Rights Office, told VOA during a recent visit to Nairobi that the situation is troubling.
Yes, there are ceasefires. Yes, that has led to some reprieve, some calm, where people are able to actually leave their homes and try to flee. But airstrikes are continuing. The takeover of residential buildings for military purposes by the RSF is continuing. And even people who are trying to flee, on the way, they're facing not only security risks, but extortion. There's acute shortages of medicines, of food, of fuel. The situation is really rising to the level of a full-blown conflict.
The conflict has the potential to affect the whole region and beyond. Kweku Nwama, professor of international politics at American University in Washington, tells VOA.
Sudan has seven neighbors, all of whom have some degree of, chronic instability. And so this conflict can go regional in a minute. And it can even spill over across the Red Sea into, Saudi Arabia, Yemen. So there's a whole bunch of things that can go wrong in the region.
Representatives from the Sudanese army and the rapid support forces have been meeting in the Saudi city of Jeddah. While the immediate need is to try to broker a truce and lay the groundwork for broader discussions, Susan Stigant, Africa Director for the U.S. Institute of Peace, says there are concerns about Sudan getting back to a civilian-led government.
I think many people have expressed questions and concerns about the role of civilians and citizens and political leaders who will absolutely need to be at the center of discussions about any political future, and who are those who are really on the front lines right now responding to the humanitarian crisis inside of Sudan.
The head of the Rapid Support Forces, General Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, also known as Hemeti, said in a recent tweet post that he and the RSF are committed to democracy and the transition to a civilian-led government. The Gallo's counterpart in the army, General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, had made no such pledge, though it's worth noting that the Gallo and Burhan cooperated to overthrow Sudan's joint civilian-military government in October 2021. The ongoing conflict has created an exodus to many neighboring countries, including South Sudan, where many left a few years ago when that country also experienced a civil war. Now some have been forced to come back, says Charlotte Hallquist, spokesperson for the UN Refugee Agency in South Sudan.
We have recorded almost 45,000 individuals that have crossed, but the numbers are likely much higher than that. So it's this ultimate tragedy of a second displacement. So they fled their country during the civil war. They sought safety in Sudan and are now fleeing back to South Sudan.
She said many have spent long days on the road, walking, taking the bus, or using donkey carts to cross the border into Upper Nile State in South Sudan. They are arriving exhausted and hungry, says Hallquist. The refugee agency is providing emergency relief at the border and transporting people to the town of Rank. But Rank has limited resources, she says, and the agency is encouraging people to move on from there. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Nairobi.
The presidential bid of a popular Senegalese opposition politician was thrown into doubt when a court of appeal gave him a heavier suspended sentence than is expected in a libel case. The decision yesterday triggered a small protest that riot police quelled with tear gas. Reuters News says the ruling against Ousmane Sonko is the latest twist in a long-running legal saga that has denounced as politically motivated a standoff with authorities that has fueled unrest in what is widely viewed as one of West Africa's most stable democracies. In March, Sonko received a 2-month suspended sentence in the libel case involving the tourism minister, a ruling that has still allowed him to compete for the presidency next February. But his lawyer has said the appeal hearing expanded the suspended sentence to 6 months, which would likely preclude him from the race under the Electoral Eligibility Code. Sonko also is charged with raping a beauty salon employee in 2021 and making death threats against her. He denies all wrongdoing. The Christian Association of Nigeria says it is still searching for 20 people abducted by gunmen from a church during a Sunday service. The association says gunmen invaded the church of a remote Kaduna State village and took more than 40 people, but later let them go. Kaduna is among Nigerian states most affected by groups of armed bandits who frequently kidnap for ransom, as Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja, Nigeria.
The Kaduna State Chair of the Christian Association of Nigeria Tuesday said about 42 people were in the church on Sunday morning before the attackers invaded and took all the worshippers away, including women and children. He said the bandits later released 22 of them and have been holding the remaining 20. It is the latest attack on a church in Nigeria. Reverend Joseph Hayab, Secretary General of the Christian Association of Nigeria, spoke to VOA by phone.
Up to now, the people are with the bandits. The bandits have not called. The ones, the leftover in fear, have left the town. The bandit, for some reason, just selected some and allowed them to come back. Sometimes when they pick a large number like that, they will select those who they think are strong enough, those that will not use to bargain to get money.
Kant said the state police have been told about the abduction. Police have yet to issue a statement, and spokesman Muhammad Jalige did not take calls for comment. Armed gangs known locally as bandits have been carrying out kidnap for ransom raids in northern Nigeria for years. Local villages, schools, and churches are often targets. Gangs have been especially active in Chikun district, where the church is located. CAN's national spokesperson, Luminous Janamike, says this latest kidnapping is one too many.
It's a deeply disturbing and troubling development. The Christian Association of Nigeria is closely monitoring the situation and is in contact with the families of the victims, as well as with the authorities, to obtain more information on the incident. While the security agencies are making efforts to address the problem, it is clear that more needs to be done to protect places of worship from attacks by criminals and terrorists.
Nigeria is facing numerous security challenges, but kidnap for ransom attacks are rampant. Experts say a declining economy and increasing hardships are fueling the rise in insecurity and criminality. Janamike says to address the problem, authorities must fix some fundamental issues.
To put an end to the incessant attacks on churches and other places of worship, it is important that the government takes a comprehensive approach that involves addressing the underlying social, economic, and political factors that contribute to insecurity in the country.
In May 2022, the prelate of the Methodist Church of Nigeria was kidnapped. He was freed after a huge ransom was paid. In July, hundreds of clergymen protested attacks on priests in Kaduna after a clergyman was gruesomely killed by gunmen while on his farm. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. Kenyan investigators say they have resumed the search for members of a doomsday cult in a forest where more than 100 corpses have been exhumed. The Interior Ministry described them as victims of a highly organized crime, and hundreds of people are still reported missing. Paul McKenzie, leader of the Good News International Church, is in custody, accused of ordering followers to starve their children and themselves so they could go to heaven before the end of the world, which he said would come on April 15th. Reuters reports the search operation in the Shakahola Forest in southeastern Kenya was suspended for a few days due to bad weather. Last week, a court granted bail to prominent tele-evangelist Ezekiel Odero, whom authorities say they suspect of being involved in the mass killing of his own followers, though there's been no mention of bodies being found. Odero is also suspected of helping launder money for McKenzie, according to court documents seen by Reuters, in which police say huge cash transactions thought to be linked to the sale of houses belonging to McKenzie's followers were traced to Odero's bank accounts. There are growing concerns that the African Union will not have the funding necessary to intervene in multiple crises facing the continent in the near future. Analysts say the financial model on which the AU is based is failing. The African Union itself recently said it is not financed in a predictable, sustainable, equitable, or accountable manner. Darren Taylor has the story.
The AU says 28 of 55 member states don't pay their yearly contributions to the institution tasked with upholding peace and stability and ensuring economic progress in Africa. At a meeting last year, the official in charge of the AU's finances, Dr. Monique Nsanzabaganwa, expressed hope that countries would use future economic benefits from the African Continental Free Trade Area wisely.
It also provides an avenue for member states to mobilize the requisite financial resources required to implement our various development programs in our quest for self-sufficiency and self-reliance.
But the International Crisis Group's senior advisor for the AU, Liesel Lowe-Vordran, says the organization remains very far from financial independence. She says it's overly dependent on funding from international donors to manage its programs and operations.
The African Union's total budget is around $600 million per year. And more than 60% of that is funded by international partners, mostly the European Union. On the African side, five countries pay the most, including South Africa, Nigeria, Morocco, Algeria, and Egypt.
She says not all the countries defaulting on payments to the AU are too poor to afford the levies, as they seem to have no problem paying the requisite fees to the United Nations.
African countries have been paying or not paying or paying a little for so long that, you know, the Minister of Finance says, you know, why should we now pay more than we have in the past? So for symbolic reasons, it's important to get to a point where the African Union pays the entire budget. It's not a lot of money when you see what is being spent on other things. And we have 55 member states. So
Lowe-Vordran says peacekeeping operations are currently costing the AU astronomical amounts of money, which further erodes the organization's capacity.
Some of these peacekeeping operations are something like $1 billion a year. Like in the DRC, there are 20,000 troops. You can imagine the cost of that. There are a plethora of peacekeeping operations. What often happens is the African Union steps in the Sahel, in Burundi, the DRC, South Sudan. African Union comes in the emergency, launches an operation. Lots of African soldiers get killed. Then the African Union just can't sustain it, and then it gets transformed into a UN peacekeeping mission.
Lowe-Vordran says this does nothing for the credibility of the AU and makes a mockery of its motto of African solutions for Africa's problems. She points out the AU's programs and operations are always in danger of collapse, especially given the current economic climate when big international donors are themselves cash-strapped. That's why, she says, it's so important for the AU to cultivate a more diverse range of funding as soon as possible, with the help of all member states. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yeheyes Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, and our engineer, Nashwan Kali, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
VOA Africa is your trusted source for news, sports, entertainment, and music. Stay engaged with VOA Africa. We love to hear your voice. You can call us 24/7 on WhatsApp and leave a message, leave comments, requests, or greetings. We may play your message on VOA Africa. Dial the international code +1 then 202-258-3076. VOA Africa is always happy to hear your voice. The number again is the international code +1 then 202-258-3076.